The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
On Newstalk.
Promised we would return to the issue of cost of living, though, and that's what we're going to do right now. In a few minutes' time, we're going to be joined by a number of different people, different expertise from different areas, to talk about where this ship is going and how we turn it around. But I think it's important right at the outset to get a sense of just how much this is catching people and putting them under pressure. And Tracy Haid joins me now. Tracy, you're very welcome to the show, and thanks a million for taking the time to chat. How has the increase in cost of things like fuel and food and everything else impacted you?
Well, it makes my everyday living very, very hard. I struggle every single day. I have to budget from week to week, and some weeks I can't even buy food. And I often have to go to St. Vincent de Paul to get assistance to buy food or even fuel in the winter.
And what's the family situation, Tracy, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm a single parent of one child.
And I assume, like any parent, when times are tight like that, you make sure there's food there for the child, and you're the one who goes without.
There's always food for my child, always. That's the one thing I make sure of, that there is food for her. And I quite often, and more often, go without food. She will always have food for her lunches in school and dinners. I might only get a dinner in a day because there might not be any more food for me earlier on in the day. Because if she sees me not eating, she'll get very worried.
And how much worse has that problem become in the last few months, Tracy?
Well, the cost of everything has gone up. Even the likes, if I want to buy petrol for the car, that's even more expensive. And even, say, recently I had my NCT, and when I had to go back for the repairs, the mechanic even told me the parts for my car are more expensive now than they were a few years ago. It's even gone down to that.
Yeah, absolutely everything. Yeah.
Absolutely everything, down to the simplest thing of repairing a car. Like, that has put a big pressure on me in the last few weeks, because my NCT was recently. I've gone off 3 or 4 weeks without buying shopping.
And what do you do when you don't have money for shopping? It's just reliance on Vincent de Paul and the charity of others, is it?
Either reliance on Vincent de Paul, or on weeks where I have a little bit extra, I stock up on the likes of meat from the cheap section, if say the likes of the shops, you know, where they put the reduced meat.
Yeah.
I buy that and I put it in the freezer to make sure I have enough on the weeks where I don't have money. Because otherwise we wouldn't have dinners. It's just the only way I can do it.
And have have you managed to shield your daughter from the reality of it so far?
I don't think she's fully aware of how hard I have to struggle with money. Now, she is in some ways aware. She will ask for, say, nice things or sweets and stuff like that, and I won't be able to get them for her because I simply don't have the money. I will say, sorry, I don't have the money. I can't get that.
Yeah.
Or she'll want toys in a shop or something like that, and she can't get it. Your birthday's coming up. I'm not buying you something like that when your birthday's coming up. You know.
But even, Tracy, when things are as tight as you described them, a birthday coming up or anything out of the ordinary, the car repairs, I suppose, as an example, must completely blow your budget apart.
Yeah. Oh, it does. And it really did this week. Only I had a friend help me out this week and I didn't ask for the money, they just offered. Sometimes I have friends and family that will help out, but I don't like having to go to friends or family and ask or beg for money. I don't do that. It's not easy to have to do that. You shouldn't have to be begging for money off people.
Do
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, whatever about the financial toll, I mean, there's a mental toll and an emotional toll. It can't be easy.
Yeah, it causes a lot of anxiety. Like, I do suffer with anxiety because of all of it. It's very, very hard, and there's nights where I do be very upset over it. Because I'm sick and tired of trying to struggle every single week. Like, I do want to work, but it's very hard when you're on your own and then there's childcare costs on top of it if you do work, which I've worked out. I'm not sure I'd be much more financially better off working.
So, because I was going to ask that just about work. So you've done the maths and there's just no difference, is it?
No, there is no difference. And plus then in the summer, there is no other options for childcare during the summer where I live. So I don't know if any employer would keep me on if I can only work during the school year. I also have a lot of health issues, so I have a lot of hospital appointments myself. So I'm not sure if I'm a good person to have working for you. They'd probably fire me within a short period of time, because some months I could have up to 8 hospital appointments.
And I mean, if things don't improve, Tracy, or rather, whatever about not improving, if things get worse, and we suspect they might get worse on the cost of living front,
yeah.
I mean, where's that going to leave you?
It's going to leave me having to think about certain things. Like we won't be able to do certain journeys with the car. We might have to do, I need the car for my hospital appointments, because some of them are in certain places that the public transport is not good enough to get to. And even at that, public transport in itself is expensive. But I'll have to get rid of certain things, I'd say. We won't be having treats. We don't do treats very often anyway, but I honestly don't know where that'll leave us.
Well, listen, I appreciate you taking the time I do to talk to us, Tracy, because I know it can't be easy to share a story like that to everybody who's listening into the show today. And if you stay with us after a very quick break, we're going to be speaking to people with expertise in a whole range of different areas to try and get a sense of where this is going and how people like Tracy can be helped. So stay with us. And this is The Hard Shoulder. Kieran Cuddihy with you until 7 o'clock. And my thanks again to Tracy Hayde, who spoke to us before the break. Tracy spoke very kind of clearly and passionately and put in very stark terms how the cost of living crisis can really bite. And she gave examples of going without food herself, but trying to shield her daughter from the fact that she was doing. So we want to get a sense of where this is going and what solutions maybe the government could turn to. Kevin McPartlin is with me, the CEO of Fuels for Ireland. Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin, spokesperson of Workers' Rights, Enterprise, Trade and Employment. And Dr. Karina Dourley, the Research Area Coordinator for the Tax, Welfare and Pensions team at the ESRI. Karina, I might start with you. This is the difficult one of kind of staring into the crystal ball. But in the short to medium term, I mean, much as it pains me to say this, because Tracy's probably still listening, it is going to get a little bit worse, isn't it?
It does seem like it's not going to get any better this year, at least. So the kind of latest forecast for inflation put it peaking at maybe around 8% later this year before falling back to maybe a more manageable level of 3-4% next year. But that doesn't come soon enough for many families like Tracy, who very sort of passionately put into focus how it feels on the ground for someone who's faced with this cost of living crisis and can't actually afford to put food on the table from week to week.
And where are we in terms of oil prices and how that's reflecting at the pumps, Kevin?
Well, when you say oil prices, if you're meaning the crude prices per barrel, it's not a terribly accurate indicator right now, because you have the currency difference. You know, the crude prices are quoted in dollars, we're selling in euros. There's all of the other elements that go into the refined product. But wholesale prices, which are probably more indicative,
yeah,
have been increasing again over the last few weeks. There's a couple of seasonal factors, and I mean seasonal very direct to particular days. Memorial Day holiday in the US always puts a spike in gasoline prices, for example. It's one of those strange economic quirks. I would hope that we've seen that kind of settle now, but there's no guarantees. You know, I'd be misleading if I were to try and tell you that I have some crystal ball. There isn't one. There are a couple of things that could make it a lot easier in the very short term. If the OPEC countries increase their production dramatically, that would have a significant impact that would help us all, Tracy included out. But There's no guarantees of anything at this point.
And there had been, because you and I had spoken maybe a couple of months ago when the graph was kind of going through the roof and the government brought in measures, prices did settle down. To what extent did that few cent off each litre, did that paper over the continuing rise in prices, or was that reflected in the wholesale price? Was there a levelling off for a period and it's gone up again?
To be fair, it was more than a few cent. It was 15 cent per litre on diesel and 20 cent per litre on petrol, although they were including VAT in that. The problem was that the prices were rising so quickly, wholesale prices, and this is verifiable. Anybody can go and look at the Platts price, which is the global indicator. They went up 22 cent in the 48 hours before the excise duty cut came in. So it was wiped out almost as soon as it came about. And you know, government's approach of, well, we did that and now we don't need to do anything else, you know, is really shown to be foolish. And even today, Eamon Ryan saying that they had been a change of thinking on this reduction in the NORA levy that had been announced back in November. I mean, it's crazy that we have a government that's saying that it's doing everything that it can to reduce the cost of energy and how that's contributing to the high cost of living right now, and to renege on a promise that was made 6 months ago is foolish.
Louise, what should the government be doing?
Well, the government should be listening to the opposition. You won't be surprised to hear me say that. But really, what we have done is we have put forward in Sinn Féin, we have put forward costed solutions. So they should look at the lived reality for people. The very first thing they need to understand is people can't wait until their budget. So they're saying, we're monitoring everything, but we're going to do nothing. So, I mean, I've spoken to on the media with people from government and they'll say we're monitoring this on a week-to-week basis, but we're actually doing nothing until October. So for people like Tracy, and I want to say fair play to Tracy, because that is not an easy thing to do. It's a really, really tough thing that she did. But I hope that that members of our government were listening to her, actually. But what they can do and what they should do immediately is put in place a cost of living payment for people who are really, really struggling now. They also need to look at what they can do in terms of fuel prices and how, whatever they can do, every lever that they have has got to be pulled. They also need to look at increasing the social welfare payments, the working age social welfare payments. We think they should be increased by €7.50 per week. And the reason that we think that is because at the time there was an increase in social welfare, the last time it wasn't keeping pace with inflation, and now inflation has far outstripped. Mm. So for people who are on social welfare, on a fixed income, for them, they have no insulation against a shock. Likewise, for workers on low to middle income, you know, they dread the bills that are coming in when you're looking at a 57% hike in your ESB bill, a doubling of your home heating oil bill in the last year alone. And I think that what the government can do is they can recognise that a mini budget is what's needed, and that needs to happen now.
There's no one from government here, so I'd have to play devil's advocate, but what they might suggest is that they only have so many arrows in their quiver, and you know, a mini budget now, and then we have the budget proper in October, and when they hear kind of predictions of inflation lasting beyond that, they think there'll be talk of another mini budget come December, another in February. You know, we to a degree they feel they have to hold off and see how much pain, is not how they describe it, but how much pain society can absorb before they act.
I think we heard from Tracy that there isn't any scope to absorb any more pain. And I think that they need to be listening to the lived reality, and they need to be understanding where people are at, and they can't wait. So, I mean, when you talk about the budget in October, right, most of the budgetary measures don't come into place until January. So you're not talking about, you know, a couple of months. You're actually talking about a very, very long time for people who cannot wait for the government to act. I mean, Sinn Féin have done nothing since this crisis started but put forward solutions. We have said to the government, we will work with you. We want to ensure that, you know, that people have the capacity to be insulated against shocks. And I mean, when we look at how we came into this crisis, we came into this crisis with the highest childcare costs in Europe, with the highest, among the highest rents in Europe. So people were already on the back foot. So, I mean, we have said the government could, if they were minded to, immediately freeze rents and introduce a refundable tax credit, which would put a month's rent back into renters' pockets. And they could also cut the cost of childcare.
Kevin, have you seen any changes in behaviour at the pumps? Like, are there people filling up less?
No, not to any significant extent. And the reason for that is people don't buy fuel. It's not a discretionary thing. People don't say, oh, the price of fuel is cheap today, I'll go for a spin. People have to get to work. They have to get the kids to school. They have to get to the Camogie game. They have to go visit their mother in Mallow, whatever it is they have to do. The reality is that people need fuel and other energy sources. They need to keep the house warm. They need to get where they're going. Businesses need to get products to their market. And if I can come back to one thing you said, Kieran, you talked about the fact that there are, you know, the quiver only holds so many arrows for the government. Mm. Well, actually, there's more arrows in the quiver than they were expecting because of the high wholesale price of fuel and because VAT is charged on it. They're actually collecting 25 million per month more than they were collecting at this time last year. That's despite the excise cut. So there's 25 million that could be used to take a little bit of the sting out of the situation that Tracy and everybody else is living in.
Karina, it strikes me as well, like when you look at the breakdown, there was a breakdown in one of the newspapers over the weekend, and forgive me, I can't remember which, was in the Sunday Independent yesterday, different areas and price inflation in each, and they had kind of gas and home heating oil and petrol and diesel and what have you, and some of them up kind of 30, 40, 50%. And then food price inflation was about 4.8%. Now, a lot of people will have felt that when they go to do the shopping, but I mean, if we ever get to a stage where food price inflation gets up to the double figures, then I mean, you're in a really volatile situation, aren't you?
Absolutely. I mean, if you want to think about policy measures to help with the cost of living, you have to know who's worst affected. And we do know that the worst affected households are low-income households because they spend a larger portion of their budget on food and fuel. And those are the items that are subject to the highest price rises recently. So it's low-income households. It's also elderly households and rural households. And the first two groups, if you take low-income households and elderly households, they are also more likely to be on fixed incomes like social welfare, right? So they're not going to be able to go to their employer and say, I need a wage rise. You know, they're not going to benefit from any wage inflation this year. They are on fixed incomes. And if they are going to be able to deal with the rise in the cost of living, they're going to need some sort of package in terms of social welfare. So if government are reluctant to sort of decrease the price of fuel because they want to encourage behavioural change in terms of fuel consumption, they can look at mitigating measures, targeting measures through the social welfare system that would help those who are most affected by this.
Louise, that's going to be the political temptation going into any budget is going to be to kind of cast the net wide and provide some sort of relief for the most amount of people. And I was asking John Fitzgerald about it, The Economist, last week, and when I put that to him, he says, oh God, I hope they don't do that. The argument being, exactly as Karina has set out, that, you know, the resources are finite, mm-hmm. and they simply just have to be honest with people and say, listen, it's going to be tough out there for some people, and for some people we can't do anything, but we simply have to do something for those who are most in need.
But the numbers of people who are most in need is growing because of the cost of living crisis. So, I mean, yes, absolutely, measures have to be targeted. I mean, the OECD have said this in relation to the government measures because they weren't targeted. The ESB rebate, for example, was given to people who have holiday homes. You get two. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me, being honest. I don't see that people should get a double payment because they have the capacity to buy a holiday home. I think that could and should have been targeted. I think they could look at putting a discretionary energy fund in place just to help people through the winter. I mean, they need to recognise this is not going to last forever, but for as long as it's here, I think they do need to do more and to recognise that people need action from the government now simply because they've reached the limit, and it does need to be targeted. And I think that's important that they look at, you know, the measures that can be the most effective, that can be targeted where they're absolutely needed. Yeah. And I mean, things like a great announcement and, you know, and a good idea, 20% reduction in public transport costs. That was a good idea. But they need to recognise as well, that's not going to help you if a bus doesn't go near your house. I mean, if you can't get the bus to school and you have to drive your kids to school, well, you have no option but to put a fill of diesel in your car.
I'm getting the train from Carlow tomorrow because the prices at the pumps are so high. Kevin, how long are they going to stay that high?
I mean, look, there's no predicting these prices. It's extremely volatile. We've seen what has happened in recent months. It'd be foolish, Karen, to try and give you any steer. I wouldn't know.
Karina, I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask you, beyond medium to short term, how long this is all going to last. But if you want to venture a guess,
I will take the fifth on that.
All right. OK, listen, Kevin McPartland is the CEO of Fuels for Ireland. Dr. Karina Dourley is the Research Area Coordinator for the Tax, Welfare and Pensions team at the ESRI. And Louise O'Reilly is Sinn Féin spokesperson on workers' rights, enterprise, trade and employment. Thank you all very much for joining me today. And listen, thank you again to Tracy as well. Tracy Haid. Mick says, my heart goes out completely to Tracy and her hardship just trying to live and give a good life to her daughter. Sad reality is this is her Ireland now. What an embarrassment. Mick, thank you for the text.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.